Good morning, Fairhaven. My name's Jeremy. I'm one of the pastors here. And this morning, we get to jump into the second to the last week of a series we've called The Undivided Self. And if you're newer with us today, what we've been talking about in this series is essentially, what does it look like for those of us who call ourselves followers of Jesus? If you've said yes to Jesus and committed to follow, what does it look like to do that in the places where God has called you to be? We've talked about what does it look like to be a follower of Jesus in places like your workplace, like your school, like your neighborhoods. And we've talked about things like it matters less where you call work as much as it does who you are when you show up, right? It matters less where you live as much as it does who you are to your neighbors. What does it look like to live as a follower of Jesus in the different places that we find ourselves? But today I want to kind of pull back a little bit and ask, what do we do? Those conversations are easy, right? To have them on a Sunday morning, what does it look like to follow Jesus at work? Those conversations are easy. But what do we do when it gets hard? What do we do when it feels like our hopes and our dreams, when our plans, when it feels like the storm is shaking us? And it's, what do we do when it feels like we're all alone? When it feels like the group is going this way and we find ourselves on our own? What do we do when it feels like things are starting to rock us? How do we live then? And I was actually talking about this morning with a buddy of mine. He's one of the pastors over at South Harbor. His name's Tim. Tim and I lead trips to Israel together. And we were talking about this idea, and we kind of stumbled into this idea. Like, it feels like there's a bunch of things that we teach when we're in Israel that talk about this. And then we had this moment where we're like, what if we try to do that on a Sunday morning? So like, what if we try to like in this space bring you there, or maybe more appropriately, what if we try to bring some of those teachings to you here? And so this morning, what I want to do is I want to like, we're all going to get on an airplane and like, we're going to fly over, and I want to show you a few different things in Israel that I think speak to this. So I want to show you a handful of pictures, I want to show you a handful of pictures about kind of three different things. We're going to look at three different trees this morning. And so I want to start by answering the question that's jumping in your head. Like, did I really come to church to have somebody tell me about trees? And the answer is yes. And I'm actually quite excited to do so because I'm always blown away. I'm blown away at how the scriptures will so often use their world to tell us something about who God is. That to the authors of the scriptures, if something existed, in some way it can point us to seeing a bigger, fuller, better picture of who God is, including their very trees. And so today, I want to show you three trees. And so we're going to start by going down into, it's one of my favorite places in all of Israel. It's deep in the Negev Desert. It's an area known as the Wilderness of Zin. And what we do when we head to Ein Avdat, this location in the desert, is we get into a bus in the morning. And often the bus trips are relatively short, but this one's a little bit longer. And as you're driving that morning, you're looking out the windows and all you see is desert, it's rocks, it's barren, there's nothing. And then there's this moment deep into the drive where you realize we're starting to descend into this lower area in the desert, and we come to this little parking area where we'll park, we'll get off the bus, and we'll start hiking into kind of this gorge type area. So it's literally, it's desert, it's barren, it's rock. And then as we start hiking into kind of this little crevice between these rocks, what you realize, there's actually water at the bottom. If we go to the next screen. So we actually find there's water. This location, it's called Ein Avdat. Ein means spring, so it's quite literally the spring of Avdat. And as you hike through here, you realize right along that spring, there is some growth. There's some bushes kind of grow right along the spring. You can kind of see it right there. But I'll never forget my first time in this area, I was hiking, and you see those bushes along the water, but then you start to recognize, like, there's trees growing out of the cliff. Like, I wish I had a better photo of it. This is from above looking back down. But there are areas where it is just sheer rock face, and there are trees growing out of the rock. And remember my first time, I couldn't help but wonder, like, the water's down here, the trees are growing out of the cliff. How in the world is a tree growing out of the cliff? And then as you get closer to it, what you find is some of these trees right along kind of this edge of that kind of bowl there. When you get up close to it, what we find is, although it's anchored into the cliff, these trees have these intricate, complex root systems that are actually running down the rocks, stretching all the way down to that spring underneath. The trees are growing up there, but they're rooted in something so much deeper. The prophet Jeremiah, in his book, in Jeremiah, he speaks about a tree like this. Let's go to Jeremiah. Jeremiah says, "This is what the Lord says. Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. That person will be like a bush in the wastelands. They will not see prosperity when it comes. They will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in a salt land where no one lives. But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit." See, Jeremiah, he kind of juxtaposes two types of trees, kind of a bush and a tree, because as you're driving to this location at Einav Dot, if you're looking out the windows, you're going to see a lot of things that look like this. It's these little bushes out in the desert, and right after the rainy season, they're a little bit green, but after the sun has baked on them for some time, after the dry season, these types of bushes get brown, they get brittle. They're so thinly rooted that if you walk up alongside them at the end of the dry season, especially in grab, you can almost just pull it out of the ground. Jeremiah, looking at his world, recognized there's a lot of people in his world whose lives looked like this. It was shallow. It was they were living just at the surface. There was no depth. There was nothing anchoring them in anything deeper than themselves. And Jeremiah says those who trust in themselves will look a lot like this bush. I don't know about you, but is it just me, or in a lot of ways does our world feel a lot like Jeremiah's? Right? This tendency to live at the surface. This, we don't want to do the hard work of actually putting down roots, of digging into something deeper. It's way easier to just go through the motions, to just run through, to just let today blend into tomorrow, into the next day. But the problem is if we are people who are not putting deep roots into something that can actually anchor us, there will be times in life where the sun bakes down on us, right? There are times in life when we get thrown into the desert, when our hopes and dreams, when they fall apart, when the things that we were hoping would be aren't, we get thrown into the desert. Jeremiah says, if we live on the surface, we might find ourselves a lot like the bush. But he says he doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. Because if we, Jeremiah says, put down roots, if we anchor our lives into something bigger and deeper than ourselves, if we put roots down into our faith, we can actually anchor ourselves, not like the bush, but more like the tree growing out of the cliff face, that when the sun bakes down, Jeremiah says, the sun will still be hot, but we will be anchored in something deeper. That when it falls apart, when the world starts shaking, we can hold solid, which brings me to my next tree. For my next tree, we're going to leave the desert. We're going to leave the wilderness of Zin, that Negev desert, and we're actually going to jump. We're right now right across the valley from Jerusalem. So you have Jerusalem, you have the Kidron Valley, and right across the valley, you have the Mount of Olives. On the Mount of Olives is the Garden of Gethsemane. There you have some of the oldest olive trees in all of Israel. In fact, in Israel, some of the oldest things you will find in Israel, some of the oldest things you will find in the entire world are the olive tree. There are olive trees in Israel that are dated to be thousands of years old. But the interesting thing about the olive tree, how many of you went through science class and you learned how you tell the age of a tree? How do you know how old a tree is? You count its rings, right? You cut the thing down, you inspect the trunk, you see how many rings there are, and that'll tell you the age of the tree. That, in my understanding, works for almost every tree, but it doesn't work for the olive tree. Because there's something interesting about the olive tree. That as the olive tree grows, as it gets older, something interesting happens with the olive tree where it actually starts to hollow out from the inside. So if you were to take an old olive tree and cut it down, you don't find rings, you find this big open hollow cavity in the middle. In fact, an olive tree, over the course of its life, the trunk and the branches of the tree might die, might fall down, might get destroyed multiple times in the life of the tree, but the root system of the olive tree actually cannot die of natural causes. So the way you learn the age of an olive tree isn't by cutting it down and counting the rings, but instead it's by studying how big and complex the root system is. That will tell you how old the tree is. Because at some point, the thing gets big, it gets hollow, the edges get thin, a storm's gonna come, something's gonna happen, it gets cut down, a storm comes, the entire tree comes crashing down. But then what happens is the root system, as long as the root system is healthy, as long as nothing's happened to that, over a period of time, what you find is a new tree is gonna spring forth. You're going to see this little new tree start out of the old root system. That new tree is called, we call it a shoot. In their language, they would have called it a netzer. And to the biblical world, the olive tree became a picture about how when we look around, even when life feels like it's the darkest and the hardest, and even when the storms come crashing in and it feels like everything's crumbling down, the olive tree for the biblical authors became a picture that even when it feels like it's all coming down, God is still doing something. God can bring something new. The prophet Isaiah lived in a time when things were dark. When the Israelite people, they had all these promises that God had given them, and it felt to them like they weren't getting, like God was not making good on his promises. They were being destroyed, they're being oppressed, and Isaiah, in that moment, Isaiah is going to say this. He says, a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. Jesse was the dad of David, so a shoot will come from this line of David. From his root, a branch will bear fruit. What tree is Isaiah referencing? The olive tree. In a time when it felt like everything in their world was crashing down, Isaiah said, no. In the midst of it, we will not be a people who give up because we know that God is still doing something. They will come to understand that this shoot, this netzer coming from the stump of Jesse is going to be pointing to this Messiah, this promised one, this one who is going to come and redeem them and restore them and lead them as their king. We know the shoot that will come from the stump of Jesse from the line of David becomes Jesus himself. And then a little fun, a Bible trivia, where was Jesus born? It's just Christmas, right? He's born in Bethlehem. Where did Jesus grow up? Nazareth, the word Nazareth in their language, in their language, the word Nazareth was pronounced Netzeret. Anybody recognize a word in Netzeret? Netzer, meaning shoot, Jesus, the shoot that would rise out of the line of David, literally grew up in Shootville, in Shoot City, right? Netzeret, named after a shoot. And what Jesus was, what Jesus, in a time when they're under the oppression of Rome, when things are dark, maybe at their darkest, they saw God doing something new. See, the reality is we don't know when the storm's going to come, right? Like the olive tree, you don't know when the storm's going to come. You don't know when at any moment things could come falling back down. But what we know, what the scriptures tell us, is that if we, especially if we call ourselves followers of Jesus, if we're people who put down those deep roots, who root ourselves, who anchor our lives in something deeper than just ourselves, something deeper than just surface, if we anchor ourselves, even when the storms come, the storms still won't be easy. But we can know that we are holding on to something bigger, something stronger, someone that can be trusted, and that we can trust that even in the midst of it, God can still do something new. God can still do something beautiful. And then there's something that happens. I think when we put down those roots, when we live that type of life, there's something that happens to us, especially in the way we, I think the way we view ourselves in our world, which actually brings me to my third tree, my last tree. It's this guy. So for this one, we're going to leave Jerusalem. We're now coming back to that first location, Ein Avdat. So we're back in the wilderness. We're in the desert. The sun is baking down. You recognize on our hike, there's a lot of smaller trees. There's a lot of bushes. There's a lot of smaller trees. But then there's this one tree. This tree, the smaller trees are enough to maybe give shade to somebody. This is a tamarisk tree. And a tamarisk tree is big enough. It has this canopy. It's big enough to give shade to a community. It's big enough to give shade to multiple people. We will actually gather under the tamarisk tree and teach about the tamarisk tree in the shade of the tamarisk tree. Now, there's something interesting about the tamarisk tree, because this thing is one of the slowest growing trees in all of Israel. So if you plant a tamarisk tree, you, the one who planted it, you will not get to enjoy its shade. It's possible your kids might a bit, but you don't plant a tamarisk tree for yourself. You really don't plant a tamarisk tree for your kids. You plant a tamarisk tree for your grandkids. Because it takes about three generations for this tree to reach its full size so that it can then provide shade. There's a story often overlooked. It's when God first calls Abraham. And God tells Abraham to go into this land that I'll give you. And Abraham goes into the land, and there's something he does pretty much right when he enters the land that I'd blown over for years until I learned about this tree. And when I learned about this tree, I find what Abraham did right when he entered the land to be absolutely beautiful. This is what he does. It says, Abraham, remember how old was Abraham when he had his kid? 100? Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there he called on the name of the Lord, the eternal God. And Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines for a long time. Abraham comes into the land, and one of the first things he does, even in his old age, is plant a tamarisk tree. Why? He'll never enjoy it. His kids will likely never enjoy it, but his grandkids will. In a lot of ways, Abraham planting the tamarisk tree right when he enters the land, when he does, was a way of telling God, God, I trust you. God, I trust that this land that you say you're giving me, I trust you enough that I'm going to do this thing for those that will come after me. What happens, I think, when we live these deeply rooted lives, when we take our faith seriously, when we root ourselves, what we find, I think, is what Jesus told us we would find, is that as we grow deeper in our love for God, we grow deeper in our love for one another, and we start asking the question, okay, what can I do The tamarisk tree is literally the answer to a selfish world, a selfish life, right? If you're only thinking about yourself, you never plant that tree. The person who plants that tree is the person who looks outside of themselves to the people around them, asking, how can I be good news to my community, to those around me? And how is the way I'm living going to pass on to those who are going to come after me? How is the way that I'm modeling my faith going to impact my kids and going to impact them to impact theirs? Because the reality is, how I model my faith is impacting my kids, and how I impact my kids will influence how their kids. What am I doing today to pass on? The rabbis actually have a question. A question they ask often, that they'll ask their disciples, their students, how many tamarisk trees did you plant today? What did you do today that might have a chance to outlive you? What did you do today to make the world a better place for those around you, to set things in motion for those who will come later? Because for me, as I think about what it means to be a follower of Jesus, I want a life that looks like these trees. I don't want to live a life that's right on the surface, that when things start shaking, I shake. I want to live a life that is putting down those deep roots in my faith, in my relationship with Jesus, a life that isn't just lived for me, because how boring is that, right? But a life that is giving itself to those around me, to investing in ways that will extend after me. And I've had the opportunity over the years that I've been able to call myself a pastor to sit with so many people in the deserts of their lives, right? In those moments when it felt like things were falling apart. And there were those conversations. There were times when you sit with someone in the midst of some unbelievable pain, and you realize in the conversation there is a depth that exists in the person I'm sitting with that is just, the storm still hurts. And yet there was something deeper anchoring them in the midst of it. And often I'd ask the questions like, what made you be who you are? How do you respond the way you are? How are you who you are? And the interesting thing is that often it's nothing big, right? It's not a big moment. It's not a big event. But it was a life of committing to a bunch of small things that made a huge difference. In that passage, we read that Abraham planted his tamarisk tree, and it said he then stayed in the land of the Philistines for a long time. I don't know everything he did in the land of the Philistines. I don't know. But I have a good idea of one of the things he did is he continued to tend to that tree he planted. Right? Is part of the reason I think he stayed is so that he could continue to tend, because he knew that in order for that thing to stand a chance, it needed a root system that would sustain it, that would support it, that would enable it to be what it could be for those who would come later. That's what I want for me. It's what I want for you. It's actually why I want to invite you. We've got 1 week left in this series. After this series, we're actually going to jump into a conversation that's going to last us about 6 weeks leading up to Easter. And during those 6 weeks, we're going to be talking about some of those practices. What can we do to be people? It's great to talk about deep roots. Awesome. How can we actually do it? How can we be people who put down those roots? In those 6 weeks, we want to share some practices, some disciplines, some ways that we can do that together, because that is my prayer for me. It's my prayer for my kids, for my family. It's our prayer for our family, and it's my prayer for each and every one of you as well. But for now, would you pray with me? God, we are grateful for you, for your scriptures, for the way you reveal yourself to us through your word and through your world which you've created. And so, God, we just pray that you would help us to be people who are anchored in you, who put down deep roots in our life, in our faith, in our walk with you. And God, may we be people who follow you so closely, we are being covered daily in your dust. We pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.